From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made late last week when Rochester Mayor Lovely Warren announced a decision for the prime piece of real estate downtown known as Parcel 5. The mayor said that after months of deliberation, the best choice is to bring a performing arts center to the property. The Golisano Center for the Performing Arts and Tower will be a joint venture between Morgan Communities and the Rochester Broadway Theater League. That project, slated to include a 3,000-seat-plus performing arts center, housing, retail, restaurants, and more parking for patrons. The estimated price tag announced last week, around $130 million. And for more than two decades, this has been the dream of many people in the theater community, led by RBTL chairman Arnie Rothschild. But this decision comes with plenty of questions. Where's the rest of the money going to come from? Are taxpayers going to be protected? What can we expect for a timeline and more? We have a lot to talk about, and Arnie Rothschild is my guest for the hour, the chairman and CEO of the Rochester Broadway Theater League. First of all, it's great to have you here, and I'll say it to you on the air. I know how long you've been chasing this, so congratulations to you. How are you doing?
First of all, thank you for that, but the congratulations really is to our community, because this is going to change downtown, and we're going to be able to bring unbelievable entertainment to downtown Rochester.
Well, unless there was some elaborate scam going on, it looked like the chances for a performing arts center were kind of dead a few weeks ago. Mayor Lovely Warren had made some comments about Tom Golisano and his offer of $25 million, first reported by News 10 NBC. And then later you had Channel 10 showing the full clip of the interview. In some people's minds, it was sort of a cherry-picked editing job. But take me through that stretch of time. Did you think at that point the chances for RBTL and Parcel 5 were dead?
I did not. You know, first of all, I recognized for a long time that it was the city's preference to have a project that was on the tax rolls. I was aware of that. And when I saw the full context of the transcription, rather, of what was actually said, I forwarded that to Tom Golisano so that he wouldn't be upset. Shortly thereafter, the mayor put a phone call in and left him an apology for the misunderstanding. So, you know, it certainly was emotional, you know, for a little bit. But Tom Golisano said to me, and, you know, years ago I would have reacted to this, but I'm going to go play golf. That's what he said.
So you feel pretty good about that decision on his part.
Yeah. The last thing that at this stage of his life that he needs to do is get in a back and forth with an elected official. And you have to understand that we were actually looking at three different locations. Parcel 5, certainly, trying to figure out how to address the city's need. Also, a location in Henrietta that had been purchased by the Seneca Nation, that's a 31-acre site, and one in Brighton. So, you know, we were hopeful that we would be at Parcel 5. And long ago, I said to Tom that, who, by the way, initially did not care about being in the city. You know, he historically has not believed that you do things in cities. But I pointed out to him one day that the most visible remnant of George Eastman having been in this community is the Eastman Theater, and that I thought that the right location for a Golisano Performing Arts Center was near the Eastman Theater. And he said, you know, look, you're going to decide what the best location is. But I do believe, by the way, that it belongs there.
Do you think the mayor got sort of a raw deal from Channel 10 in that initial edit?
I think that, you know, very honestly, I think unintentionally, you know, that people grabbed the wrong part of the story. And, you know, when I saw the transcription and realized that she was saying it in a different context, you know, that we're in a very aggressive media environment today. I think that the reporter that did the story is a great reporter, and I think that it was all unfortunate.
Now, Arnie, for weeks, the idea floating through various circles, whether it was media, different sources on background, though never confirmed, which is why it was never formally reported, was that the Galena Dutton project was essentially chosen, selected. They were just lining up final funding to get it done, and that it was essentially finished. Did you ever think that that was the case?
I felt as though until something was announced that it wasn't done, you know, and so there comes a moment in time when Andy Galena, by the way, who was a wonderful man, and I had a conversation. It started with his saying, you know, RBTL should not leave downtown. You know, are there other sites? And we reviewed a site called Parcel 10, and that didn't work. And we reviewed what is called Block F, and that didn't work. And but I felt that we should be doing everything in our power, we being RBTL, to try to do something in our city if we were allowed to do it. And so, you know, we continued to try to go through what-if scenarios. About 6 or 7 months ago, I had had a conversation with Bob Morgan, and he said, should we consider doing apartments on top of the Performing Arts Center? And I said, well, it's been done in Dayton, and it's something we should explore. And then we made our presentation to the city of Rochester, and the question came up again, would you consider housing? And the key here is that RBTL, by virtue of being a 501c3, is tax exempt. But now, with these apartments, they'll all go on the tax roll, and all the development, the commercial development, will go on the tax roll. So this becomes a very significant tax generator. And I think that at the end of the day, that was the determining factor.
Okay. And for those who, you know, wonder, well, if Galena Dutton was close to the finish line, but there were still questions about funding, aren't there questions about funding with this project? Aren't there legitimate questions about where another $105 million comes
from?
Well,
first of all, it's not, you know, I think the reporting of that number is a little unfair. Morgan has demonstrated the ability to fund everything. He just opened a $120 million complex in Canandaigua. So his, you know, there's no question that the funding for his portion comes together easily. Now, we initially were looking at $75 million.
Just for the Performing Arts Center.
Just for the Performing Arts Center. But that number is now reduced because there's common infrastructure. So, you know, think about the fact first, they're going to expand the underground parking. But all of the water that comes in, utilities, you know, all of the common walls. And in fact, the apartments start over the stage house. So it's going to decidedly reduce the cost of building the Performing Arts Center. And then we start with $25 million in hand. And the best I can do right now, Evan, is make up numbers, you know, because the engineering folks are figuring out where those common areas are. But it significantly changes. So we went from having a third of the money already in hand before we, you know, you can't do fundraising until you can say to someone, what the location is. So, you know, Tom came to me, and we'll talk about that story in a little bit if you'd like, but came to me because he wanted this thing to move forward. And he actually is the one that initiated the conversations. But we know for sure that while we had a third of the money in hand in the old construction estimates, we, you know, have decidedly greater percentage now.
Okay. So when we look at the overall price tag, you don't like $130 million for those reasons. But what is a fair way to describe, in your view, what this is going to cost?
You know, I'm not the person that can do estimates on what apartment complexes and atriums cost. But I believe that this is going to cut the construction cost of the Performing Arts Center piece by $5 or $10 million.
Okay, so maybe $65, $70 million total?
Okay.
For a Performing Arts Center.
Yeah.
And you've got Tom Golisano giving 25. Now, what initially got the mayor in a little bit of trouble was that edited portion where she said if this were George Eastman, he would have built the whole thing. And I do think it was unfair to her, because when you look at the totality of what she said, she praised Tom Golisano.
Right.
She offered a lot of respect for the work that he's done, putting his support behind a lot of different causes. But she wasn't wrong at the time to say, we still have a big gap to fill here. Right. So where's the money coming from?
And she isn't wrong. So let's go back to how it came to be that the story even got out about Tom Golisano, because the commitment was made last summer.
The $25 million?
Yes.
He came to you last summer.
Yeah, we had a series of meetings last summer. And one thing I want to explain about Tom Golisano, he doesn't just throw money at things. He does his homework really well. And
everyone in the world wants his money.
And everyone does.
Yeah.
And he's never been involved with an arts project that he's ever funded. I mean, you know, a lot of medical centers. And so so there comes this moment in time when Tom and a friend were traveling to the funeral of a friend of theirs and I'm not sure where. And he saw a new Performing Arts Center and said to the friend, we need to have something like this in Rochester. So the friend called me the next day and said, Tom Golisano wants to talk to you. And I said, about what? And he said, well, have the conversation and call me back. So we had a conversation, we had a lunch meeting, and Tom said, walk me through how this works, why, and how I can help. And I never even asked him for a dollar amount. You know, ultimately he came with that. We had a series of meetings. He looked at 10 years operating financials. He looked at He wanted an analysis of the business plan. He wanted to take a look at the revenue streams. Because you see, there's one part of this story that gets frustrating for us at RBTL. And that is this question of, will it require an operating subsidy?
And frustrating? That's one of the most important questions.
But except for the fact that in our proposal, we're talking about owning the building. Therefore, there won't be an operating subsidy because we
take
it.
But you can still come back to the city and say, look, you care about this. We're in the red $1 million.
No, respectfully, we've done the business plan. And what ends up happening with this, you see, people have used figures from the Renaissance Square development where there was a huge amount of common charges that accounted for an operating deficit. And every other study that's been done, this site does never shows a deficit.
So forget Renaissance Square.
Right.
But you're someone who understands and appreciates, not only appreciates local history, but you understand when particularly fiscally conservative people are worried about protecting taxpayers. Fair?
Okay. But again, here's our proposal. In the past, there were three criticisms. Who was going to own it?
Yep.
Will it require an operating subsidy? And can any local money come to the project? Okay. In our proposal to the city, we said the following. We will own it. Therefore, we are not looking for an operating subsidy any more than you subsidize the auditorium theater right now, which generates surpluses every operating year because we're a different kind of operating company. And, oh, by the way, we already have $25 million in hand. What we could not do in that meeting was tell them where the $25 million was coming from. We didn't have permission to do that yet. So there also comes a moment in time when we are asked to have Tom call the city and confirm that he is the source of the $25 million, which we did. But you know, in our proposal, we're not looking for hotel motel tax distribution. We're not looking for an operating subsidy. We don't want government involved. In fact, early on, government involved in operations. Early on, Tom and I talked about the fact that these projects generally go south when a city or a county is the owning and operating entity. And that's when they end up needing subsidies.
I mean, I'm looking at a story from 2003 from City Newspaper called The Frontier Fairy Tale. When Frontier Field was built in 1995, then-County Executive Bob King promised it would never cost taxpayers not one penny. But from 1995 to 2002, the county spent $8.9 million more on Frontier Field's operating costs than it has received in revenue from the stadium. And then later in the story, it says, late last year, County Executive Jack Doyle decided to redirect roughly $700,000 in annual income generated by an increase in the hotel occupancy tax toward debt payments on Frontier Field. But even with that money, it's left the county with about $1 million on average to pick up every year.
Mm-hmm.
So that's Frontier Field when there was a promise. Taxpayers, you're not going to have to have a penny. That was wrong. You look at, obviously, the Fast Ferry. I hate bringing that up because it's such a pejorative, and I would never say the Performing Arts Center is going to be a Fast Ferry, only to say people are scared to make, you know, about this idea that taxpayers aren't going to be as protected as you say.
Okay. RBTL has been operating. RBTL purchased the Auditorium Theater. We got $1 million grant to purchase it. We borrowed $1.6 million to renovate it. We operate at an operating surplus. The business of presenting theater has changed dramatically. So let's go back. If you want to use the Fast Ferry reference, Frontier Field reference.
Yeah.
The concession operations in Frontier Field, the revenue stream belongs to the ball club. Okay. The advertising belongs to the ball club. In every potential revenue stream during that negotiation, because one of my board members represented the Red Wings, the Red Wings got all the revenue, parking revenue, got all of it. And so the Red Wings have been very healthy, but it was bad contracting on the side of the county in terms of not reserving some things that have caused the county that built and owned the facility. You know, they own the facility. So they end up having to subsidize. That's a different business model than what we're talking about. We're talking about RBTL owning, raising the money. We're going to retain those concession operations. We're going to retain the ticketing surcharges. We're going to retain the, you know, we'll begin to promote shows at risk as we do now. So currently we do about 137 events a year in the Auditorium Theater. The only reason we don't do more is it's not air conditioned and there's 3 months of the year where we really can't use it well. And we generate an operating surplus, and we've been around for years. This is not like the ferry, which was saying, is there a market? You know, we've already proven the market. You know, so the I'm sorry, you know, I just don't see the parallels.
Okay. And so give me the percentage chance that whether it's 1 year in, 5 years in, 10 years in, there's any taxpayer need to subsidize.
None.
Zero.
We're going to, there's two parts of our funding plan. The first part is we're going to raise the delta between where we are now and construction costs. And I'll come back to that because we may go to the state for a small portion of that, depending on what the numbers look like. But the other thing is we're going to create a $10 million endowment. And the endowment ensures that there is not going to be a problem, even with the generations of replacement of carpeting that you go through with the wear and tear items. So, no, we have a legitimate plan here, and one that has been studied in three different studies. And the only one, there was a fourth, that was Renaissance Square, and there was no way to avoid an operating deficit because of all the common charges of a bus terminal, a college campus, and a theater together. And that was just pro rata in terms of sharing those common charge expenses.
So what happens to the auditorium theater?
It's a very serviceable 1,500-seat venue, you know, that for less produced things. Our education programs will be resident there as well. We're going to continue to operate the auditorium theater. Now, see, that we would not have been able to do that, Evan, if we were forced to go to a suburban location. That would have changed what was going to happen with the
Why is that?
Because I can move people back and forth easily. You know, the distance is manageable as opposed to being in a suburban location and then trying to bounce staff back and forth. So our plan is to continue to operate the auditorium theater. Now, it continually needs a lot of maintenance work. It's 90 years old. You know, it continually needs that. But again, we will retire the debt on it, which makes it more serviceable as well. And we'll continue to operate it.
There's no chance it's done as a venue for you?
No, we need it. There's a legitimate market need for a 1,500 seat venue.
When you got a 3,000 seat venue?
Sure, because what happens is, you know, have you ever noticed that every once in a while you go to an event where there's a lot of empty seats, and you say, "What are the people that didn't come here know that I don't know?" Well, you try to size acts specific to the venue. And right now, what ends up happening is we have so much demand for the auditorium. And if you were to go online and take a look at all the events that are in there in the next couple of months, that having a 1,500-seat venue combined with a 3,000-seat venue will bring more product to the 3,000-seat venue and create a new product that goes in the 1,500.
Now, one of the things that we heard from supporters of this kind of center is, look, we need to be able to compete to get the big shows. But then people turn around and say, we got Book of Mormon. We're already getting Hamilton. Why do we need a performing arts center?
Let me tell you that it's somewhat of an incomplete argument.
Okay.
When Hamilton was starting to look at going to the road, what they did was they made a list by theater capacity of markets. We were on the second page of the list. The odd is 2,460 seats. If you had 3,000, it would have been here a year earlier. And let's talk about what that means. So let's say you have an additional 500 seats for a performance, and we do what's called the legit week, which is 8 performances in over the 6 days. Hamilton would have had an additional 4,000 seats that were for sale. And if you use a number of, you know, like $60 a seat, that's an additional $250,000 in gross. And it costs the same for them to stay in the hotels here, feed the cast, whatever. So we would have definitely gotten the product earlier. And I have to tell you, truthfully, there are some show packagers, Disney, for example, that really don't like coming to this market. They recognize the strength of the market, but they don't like the amenities that the cast has to live with because, you know, the dressing rooms are like, this was never intended to be a theater. It was originally a Masonic temple. And so, you know, so fortunately, because we treat everybody so well over there and because we've worked with a lot of these people for years, they come. But this will make it much easier to get products like Hamilton earlier. It also opens up a whole new marketplace for popular entertainment. We've already proven this is a great comedy town, by the way. And so what you're going to see, and I'm comfortable with this, you're going to see 200 nights a year of entertainment. And by the way, the performer that we developed was only based on 180, and that showed an operating surplus. So 200 nights a year. The Visitor Association tells us, Visit Rochester says, they can bring additional conventions to town because there'll be a 3,000-seat meeting space. The convention center welcomes that as well. So, you know, all in all, it's an unusual package of events that, and it's really been studied. I mean, we're not making it up.
200 nights a year at I assume not capacity, close to capacity. The assumption is what kind of attendance on those 200 nights a year?
Well, but you don't need to be at capacity. You know, what ends up happening is the way that you price tickets typically is to take, you know, like your overall cost of the act, the staging price, and then assume, you know, like a 75% sellout. And so, you know, I mean, there are models with this thing. The key to a new venue, however, is the corporate entertaining space. You know, so the corporate events can go in there and be catered in, and, you know, the amenities that other theaters have that we don't have in the Odd. And then there's another benefit, which is not in our projections. When you go to the Auditorium Theater, you go there because you want to see the show. There is no restaurants around there. You know, that you struggle for parking. Typically in theater events, what happens is people go out before, they go out for dessert after, they'd like to have those restaurants in walking distance. Unlike a sports venue model where they eat at the concessions, what happens is these are evenings out. So we're going to have a totally different experience for people where they drive underground and park right up into the venue. There's restaurants surrounding, if you've looked at the model. The brand new restaurants will open downtown. And that's not even in our revenue model. That, I mean, you know, we don't participate in that. But it will be a game changer.
What are you hearing from people at, for example, Tower 280, that kind of thing?
Well, first of all, you know, understand that Bob Morgan is one of the owners of Tower
280. No, I'm wondering if they're excited. I mean, you got Bronca Midtown, for example. There's a restaurant there.
Yep.
You've got people living there. There's a lot of development that's happening there.
Yeah.
They view this as... I assume you're getting probably a lot of support from them.
I have to tell you, and I'm sure that people wouldn't tell me that they hated something I've worked on for over 20 years, but some people do. But I think that the overwhelming reaction of people right now is wow, and you know, you have to understand again. So I'm going to live over there. I'm going to live above the theater, and but it changes things. You can ride down elevator or escalator, or whatever. And have over 200 nights of entertainment that, right there, and it will bring younger folks than a lot of other projects because of the entertainment component. And you're going to see a lot of growth around it. If someone were to objectively look at what happened in places like Raleigh Durham when DPAC opened, and it built next to a jail, by the way, and it and part of the labor was convict labor, and but there's been explosive growth around it.
So this is a question I think Rochester has struggled with, and I think you're probably pretty well suited to at least weigh in on your thoughts on it. I remember when, you know, Bill Johnson was talking about the ferry, and it was like, you know, we can do this. This is, you know, we are a growing city. We should be celebrating what we have. We can build this partnership. And ultimately, it was too big. I wonder if the Fast Ferry was half the size, if it would have succeeded. 900 seats, 250 cars was just too big. And people will wonder, you know, are we a 3,000-seat theater, performing arts center, the Golisano Center that's described, or are we also going to have a lot of empty seats on a lot of nights? Are we the city that can fill that? Are we the city that is not dreaming too big with that project? Is that appropriate for Rochester?
Well, first of all, I want to go back to this. Is theater is a business, okay? Sometimes we confuse what we call something the arts, but in the case of popular entertainment, it's a business, and you know, if we thought that the right size was 2,500, we would have been saying 2,500, you know, because we believe the right size is 3,000 because of what I was telling you before with Hamilton. So, and again, you know, Buffalo Shays is, I think, 3,090 seats. The Landmark Theater in Syracuse is a little over 3,000 seats. So we're in the middle. We're the best market of those three as far as theater goes. You know, Buffalo is a great professional sports town. Syracuse is a great college sports town, but we're the best theater and music town, and we have the smallest venue and the oldest, and the most difficult. You know, so and the one that can not drive any economic impact. So in study after study, when people have done these around the country, if someone were to look, they would see that they cause explosive growth. Cincinnati, the Arnoff Center led to a whole redevelopment of that portion of downtown. In West Palm Beach, the Kravis Center, same kind of thing. So, I mean, now we've got two of the most successful business guys in Tom Golisano and Bob Morgan, who have looked at the project. And, you know, for years, I used to say to my wife, you know, that I realize that people think I'm crazy, you know. But then suddenly, when someone like Golisano looks at it and agrees with what you've been saying, you instantly become smarter and saner.
Well, in our second half hour, we'll take your phone calls. If you want to call the program, Arnie Rothschild, the chairman and CEO of the Rochester Broadway Theater League, is here. We're talking about the future of a performing arts center at Parcel 5. It's 844-295-TALK. That's toll-free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI for calling from Rochester, 263-9994. A few more questions I have for you. First of all, on the money side. So we know about the $25 million from Tom Golisano. If you need to get to $65/$70 million, how much more money is lined up? I know you probably can't sit here and give me names, but how much is really realistically lined up already?
Yeah, and, you know, I believe that we...
I mean, give me names if you want to. Great. But
not today. But what we will be doing within the next week, by the way, is rolling out what our fundraising team looks like. We'll be doing that. But, you know, I believe that that we could get to, you know, $50 million in local dollars. That's the goal that I'm looking at. And then you'd look for $5 million from the Senate, $5 million from the governor, $5 million from the Assembly, and they could do it over two budget cycles, as opposed to $500 million that just got approved for Buffalo. And I'm told, you know, if this is the city's priority, and it has now become that, you know, this is the first time that we ever had the county executive, the mayor, the community, the private dollars, you know, starting to flow in. So, and Tom Golisano, by the way, and Bob Morgan are going to pick up the phone also and help us raise money.
That'll help you.
Yes.
Yeah. But look, I'm a taxpayer. Why not get that last $15 million instead of from state taxpayers? Why not raise it all?
We might be able to. But the thing is that I can't sit here today and not just say, you know, here's kind of where we're starting. And you know, I mean, up until Friday, we didn't know that we had the site. So, you know, the truth of the matter.
I got to ask that question in a second there. So hold on, because that's still a big question for me. But what's the real deadline for raising this money, Arnie? And what's the real timeline for putting shovels in the ground? And then everything goes well. Opening night is when?
Okay. Well, first of all, let me answer the construction questions.
Yeah.
The Jazz Festival and the Fringe Festival are contracted to be on that site this summer. We're going to aggressively begin raising money, and then we'll have a good sense of exactly if we'll need state money, about what we'll need, because the next state budget cycle, you know, is for next April. But first and foremost, we're going to begin to raise money. Now, the first stage of construction will be the expansion of the Midtown parking garage, and that can start as early as this coming December, and then the site prep. So, Bob Morgan, and again, I've never built a tower or a performing arts center for that matter, but Bob Morgan estimated construction at 24 months.
So we're looking at sometime in potentially 2019 opening. I'm sorry, or
2020.
2020. So opening night should be in 2020, and when it comes to when you did know, you mentioned Friday. I mean, as much as you're able to share the behind-the-scenes, I mean, when did you actually know? When did the mayor call you herself? What happened for you to understand, wow, I'm going to a news conference and it's us?
Last Monday, we delivered a modified response to proposal to the City of Rochester's review committee, a week ago yesterday. And so I didn't know about when the press conference was going to be scheduled if we were moving forward until, you know, I got a phone call asking about availability, and Bob Morgan was going to be out of town on Thursday, and there was a question about whether the governor was going to be in town and whatever. And so, you know, but I became aware of the fact that there would be a press conference sometime around Thursday. For Friday morning.
And you had to figure if you were invited, it was going to go well for you. But when did you talk to the mayor on Thursday or not until Friday?
Well, no, I didn't talk directly to the mayor. What happened was the committee reached out to us to tell us that they had reviewed the proposal and wanted to move forward. And I don't know who made the call, because it was interesting. I didn't go into the presentations with the city myself. And I didn't go because, as many people know, I do a lot of Republican election messaging, although I also did messaging for the mayor. And I felt that my being in the room would make it too political. And so we have my finance chair of RBTL is Bill Sullivan, who's a former chief of staff of City Council. And so Bill Sullivan, John Parkhurst, our COO, Linda Gloss, our executive vice president, met with the city. So,
are you too close to the mayor, given the fact that you've done work for her?
No, I'm not too close to the mayor because one of the reasons that I, by the way, let me clarify this. One of the reasons that I embraced the mayor's candidacy, Evan, was that I believed I was on the Cultural District Commission with her, and I believed that that the best chance for a performing arts center to be in downtown Rochester would be if Lovely Warren was the mayor. And so what happens in the world of politics is, you know, you try to tie your, you know, to the hot horse. But in that period of time, we were under contract with Conjul. And so when she became a candidate and started talking about a performing arts center, I asked her not to talk about a performing arts center because we were planning on going to Medley Center. So my work had nothing to do with that because at that time we were under contract and there was no way it was going to be in the city.
Okay. Now, did you ever essentially offer, even if it was sort of a veiled threat to the mayor, that if it's not Parcel 5, we're going to the suburbs and it better be this?
Well, first of all, it wasn't a veiled threat to the mayor. I said publicly,
sure, okay,
that we, you know, I've been saying for years that we need a performing arts center. If it isn't in the city, you know, we're going to have to build it elsewhere. So, no, that was not part of the strategy. Nor, by the way, in my experience with the mayor, is she someone that you play chicken with. You know, that was never going to be the play. What I did was I said publicly, look, you know, the city has to decide what the city wants to develop. And we will respect the decision, but we're still going to have to move on.
Now, I know you saw the other proposals.
I did not.
Well, I mean, you at least saw what they were. I mean, the descriptions of the other proposals. I mean, there were three others, you know, and then essentially two others after Glenn Kellogg kind of threw his support behind Galena Dutton. But the biggest criticism I'm hearing is that even if this works, this is a high-end housing. This is high-end theater.
Not. Okay. No, there's an affordable housing component in it as well.
I think people are feeling like, is this access for everyone or is this for only a part of the community with money?
No, it's not. It was very important that an affordable housing component be designed in. We recognize this is, a city, you know, that and you have to address the needs and the mix of the residents of the city. No. So in the meetings that I've been in, no, it's the opposite. It is not, you know, people are assuming it's this upper end kind of project, but no, Bob Morgan is brilliant in understanding marketplaces and designing stuff that fits within the market.
You think we're going to see diversity there?
We certainly are in the theater. I know that. And I believe that there's going to be people of all races that want to live there. Yeah, I do.
But you see diversity in the theater attending?
Yeah, we're seeing ever expanding. No, I'm and employment. We also agreed, by the way, to a Rochester first hiring agreement in this proposal. So, we're just trying to be representative of the community, and we just believe that there is this huge, potentially explosive market for entertainment and housing downtown.
All right, last question, and then we'll take our only break, and then we'll get through some phone calls here. What could derail this, if anything, now?
I suppose that if I don't believe anything's going to derail it. I there's no answer for that. I think this is now this. I think this is the pivotal, changing moment in time for the city of Rochester, and I think that the community is going to embrace it. And I'm very confident about our ability to put the money together. And you know, when I talk about the state, that's only if my estimates are wrong. I think this is liable to be all privately funded locally.
Okay, and I lied. I just have to follow up on a couple other quick points here. I know you know other people in the theater community well. We get mixed ideas. What are you hearing from your friends in the theater community at large here in Rochester about this?
I actually have not had communications with a lot of people, and that's because sometimes people in the theater community, if they were to invent the firing squad, would take the intended victim, form a circle around him, and start shooting. And we have long been criticized as operating too much like a business as opposed to an arts organization. I think what's going to happen, however, is that this rising tide is going to lift all boats. I think all of them are going to benefit. I'm sure that the prospect of a new building is scary to some, but you know, I have one of my coworkers in my real world is a musician, and he tells me that the musicians of the community are just, you know, head over heels in love with this idea.
Does this seem real to you at all yet?
It was shocking. You know, what happens is you work for a long time on something, and then I was shocked the day that Tom Golisano agreed to the $25 million, for example. I actually couldn't breathe. And then along the way, when we stood in front of the microphones the other day and in front of all the media folks, one of the camera guys said, "Arnie, this, we've seen so many different generations of drawings. Is this the last one?" So
That's actually a good question.
It was a great question. But the thing is that, you know, I think we're there.
All right, let's get our only break. Come back to your phone calls with the chairman and CEO of the Rochester Broadway Theater League. It's Arnie Rothschild talking about what he says is a project that will not be derailed now. It's a performing arts center, and he's partnered with Bob Morgan, and you've seen a lot of the drawings, maybe the final drawings, for what's going on at Parcel 5. We'll get that break. Come back to your phone calls. Coming up in our second hour, a memoir from Dr. William Valenti of Trillium Health in Rochester. Dr. Valenti has been at the forefront of the battle against AIDS from those early days. In fact, he was a doctor reading the reports in 1981 that described those first few cases of gay men in Los Angeles and New York City. Didn't even really know what he was looking at. So much has changed. His memoir is remarkable. We'll talk to him next hour. All right, welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Let's work through your phone call, starting with Mark in Rochester. Go ahead, Mark.
Yes, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was wondering, with this new Performing Arts Center, with the issues of problems with the parking downtown over the years, is this going to be outsourced to the All Right parking facility, or is this in support of the Arts Performance Center?
Well, Bob Morgan and Buckingham purchased the Midtown parking garage, and so, you know, they I don't know who their contracted operators are, but but there'll be more underground parking, and they own the parking garage now, so I'm sure that they're going to do it in a way that keeps people happy.
I hope so, because that's why I refuse to park at the U of R, because of. The U of R does not own the garage, and it's pretty sad because as far as patients and people who use the U of R on a daily basis, we shouldn't have to support an outsourced parking outfit.
Well, you know, let me just tell you a quick story. One of the reasons when we looked at other parcels like Parcel 10, it's called, which is over by the arena, that to build a parking ramp cost over $10,000 a space. And so, you know, if you had a, the reason these things sadly get outsourced is that it's a huge capital outlay without and huge amount of maintenance. So, you know, but in this particular situation, keep in mind that Morgan owns the Hyatt, owns Strathallan, is involved with Tower 280 along with Buckingham, and they need the parking. And so they're going to expand the parking lot, and I'm sure it's going to be user-friendly.
Art, by the way, emails to say, and this is a good point, because when I saw Wicked, I walked to the Village Gate to have dinner at Lento. And he says, no restaurants near the Auditorium Theater. The Village Gate has several excellent restaurants with tons of well-lit, safe, abundant free parking with a short one-and-a-half-block walk. That place was jammed during Wicked, and Art makes a good point. I was there, so
are you being unfair?
No, I
need to apologize. You know, because what I'm talking about is, you know, like where you're right next door or across the street, but there are some wonderful restaurants that are at Village Gate, and I owe the people at Lento and all of those restaurants an apology. I wasn't trying to be critical of what they've done, because they've done an amazing job. And in fact, we have cast parties over at Village Gate.
Okay. Well, that's very gracious of you. And Art, thank you for the email. We'll get back to your phone calls. Let's see here. This is Steve in Rochester. Next up with Arnie Rothschild. Go ahead, Steve.
Yeah, hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have a big concern. I'm a Rochesterian, born and bred. And I just can't see the draw for Rochester for anything really big. I mean, Seattle has the Space Needle, and, you know, St. Louis has the Arts, and different things like that. You mentioned that this is going to be a game changer for Rochester. I just can't see it.
Well, you know,
there are so many.
I'm sorry.
The suburbs are fairly self-sufficient. and driving into the city. I mean, I go to the RBTL, I go to Jiva, I go to downstairs, and it's just downtown, there's some sort of a haunting aspect about downtown still, in my perception anyways, having lived here my whole life. It just seems like it's a handful of people really pushing this thing to go into the Parcel 5. And, yeah, wealthy people, of course, if they're wealthy, they're smart. I get that from Mr. Rothschild. But I don't see if there was a referendum on it or something. I just think it would be, I think it's going to be another fast ferry, unfortunately, in our community. Thank you.
All right, Steve, thank you. Go ahead, Arnie.
Well, there are moments in time when downtowns change. And so I mentioned a few of those other cities. Cincinnati was a pretty depressed downtown until the Arnoff Center was built. And Durham, when they built DPAC, as I said, they built it next to a jail. So these things have a track record of changing how downtowns work, and we believe this one will as well.
Okay. Dawn in Rochester next up. Go ahead, Dawn.
Hi, yes. Thank you for taking my question. My concern is about affordability of the ticket prices. I live in the city of Rochester. I'm a middle-class resident, and I took my niece to the Auditorium Matilda play last year, and it's a $350 visit for two people. So 75% of our population won't be able to afford the tickets. Is there anything, affordable housing is always promised in the housing part, but how about affordable tickets for the residents?
You know, I have a real funny, is the caller still there?
Yeah, go ahead.
How many people did you say went to the show?
Two people.
Okay. And I'd be willing...
I don't really afford the plays that often.
Right.
So
here's what's happening.
And brought my niece.
Here's what's happening. And this is something that we've been trying to make the public aware of. A lot of folks are going online and they're buying tickets to the theater from reseller sites and not realizing they're doing it. There's one called Rochester... Auditorium.org, for example. There's a bunch of phony reseller sites. So we have a lot of people that come in and say, why am I having to pay $175 for a ticket that says $78 on the front? And the answer is because they're not buying them directly through our ticketing system.
I don't want to cut you off, but I did buy it directly. And
okay.
It's not just the ticket pricing. It's like the day, right? It's an event to bring your niece and you.
Oh, okay. I understand what you're saying.
The program
I understand. But the thing is that you know, again, The right answer is the best way to hold ticket prices down is to have a bigger venue, because what ends up happening is that the ticket prices, remember I said that they scale based on numbers of available tickets.
Are you saying the ticket prices should be lower at the Golisano Performing Arts Center than they are at the Auditorium Theater?
I'm saying you're not going to see the rapid escalation of price because you're going to have more tickets, and what's happening around the country is that these productions are bigger and more costly. And so by having more seats, there will be more striation in the pricing.
David on Twitter wants to know, does Arnie know if those two $18 million reappropriations in the New York State budget for the old Renaissance Square still have any funds left? And if those dollars might be able to be directed to this project, or did they really spend $36 million on Ren Square planning?
I think that as I understand it, all of that money is gone.
Where did it go?
Didn't go to us? I have no idea.
Somebody's got $36 million for a non-existent Ren Square?
Yeah, I don't know exactly what was forfeited and what was paid in the planning. I don't know the math of that.
I'm calling Inspector Clouseau.
There you go.
But the point is that money is not available right now.
Once the budget cycle is closed, it's not like they hold it. So but I can tell you that I've had conversations with members of the Senate who are bullish on this project, especially if it's downtown.
And you expect that money to be there if you need it.
If we need to go back for help, I expect that they're going to be real cooperative.
Patrick in Rochester next up on the phones. Go ahead, Patrick.
Yes, and they're big cities, large scale and great presentations, theatrical works, which people now, expect, have matinees. And I think that they could be available to school kids bust in from everywhere to during the daytime to see things that they would never get a chance to unless it were dragged down to New York City. And who knows, one of those little kids may be on stage one day after we're gone.
Yeah, so, you know, you're right. And we, by the way, during Wicked, we did Thursday matinees, you know, as well, and Saturday and Sunday matinees, and we kind of quietly through our education programs and something called theater team, we had on average over 100 school kids per performance for the 2 weeks. So, you know, we do that continuously.
And expect to see that continued.
Well, that's part of the rebuilding of the marketplace for us, is that, you know, we want young folks exposed to what we do, and then they their family gets used to this being a form of entertainment.
Jenny writes to us, will the new theater be a nonprofit or for-profit business?
The theater itself, RBTL, will own, and we are a 501c3.
Okay, and she says, I'm concerned about the impact on the nonprofit arts organizations. Do you envision area arts companies such as Garth Fagan Dance, Rock City Ballet, Music, also having use of this?
Of course they'll have use of it. And the thing is that, and that it'll also free up the stage at the Odd, which, you know, so I think this is going to be good for all the arts organizations. Now, I think what ends up having to happen is that there was something for years called the Arts and Cultural Council that was a consortium of all the arts groups. And I think, you know, it needs to be rebuilt and grown so that there's, you know, some understanding that you can save money in operations by sharing computer systems and auditing and legal expense and you know, some office spaces. So, but I think that this is going to be good for all the arts organizations.
I know Bob Morgan's not here to answer this, but you mentioned earlier that, you know, he understands the city well and the housing component will have some affordable housing. A few people online are asking what affordable really means. How do you define it?
I don't know. I'm not the real estate guy.
Okay.
But I mean, that was a conversation back and forth with the city and Mr. Morgan.
Okay. And a few people had called in just asking more about our taxpayers protected. We've sort of asked and answered that. And Arnie said on the record this hour, 0% chance ongoing subsidy is going to be needed for this project.
And it's not even been requested. We've not even requested. And by the way, we should have before, but we've not even requested hotel motel tax distribution.
Okay. Let me get Eve in Rochester. Go ahead, Eve.
Hello, Mr. Rothschild. My question is, where do you currently live?
I live in the city of Rochester. I live in a building that used to be called the Daily Record Building in the Cascade District. It's now called Cascade Commons.
And how long have you lived in the city of Rochester?
9 years.
9 years. So prior to that, you must have lived in a suburban town or region around the city.
I lived in Webster.
Okay. So what do you think is changing about the perception of the city that is going to drive people to come downtown? Because the suburbs, which tend to be very white and very Republican, believe this urban myth that the city of Rochester is a dangerous place.
Well, I don't. And, you know, the thing is that I'm an old fat white guy, and you know the thing is, I decided that I wanted to live downtown where things were going on, and I have enjoyed every second of it.
Do you agree with her that do you think that people in the suburbs are scared of the city, or do you see a changing perception happening about Rochester?
I think that that you're seeing more people moving downtown. I think that there is always an old lingering perception of public safety, but I think. You know, I remember when Frontier Field opened and everybody was gnashing their teeth about would it be secure. No, I think what's going to happen is you're going to see the rebrand. You're seeing it all over the country where people are, especially empty nesters, want to come back downtown. They just want to have things to do when they're there.
All right. And one more question by email comes from Eric, about 40 seconds. He says, can Arnie comment on what happens during the day on Main Street? Is retail and restaurant planned for Main Street, or will the Main Street facade be inactive except for during shows? Seems like could be a lot of inactive time.
The Main Street facade of the theater will probably be inactive, but I'm sure that we'll I expect that maybe television stations might want to build sets in the lobbies, and that might lead to some lunch counter business. That's being done in a lot of places in downtown, so to be determined.
All right. Well, I will say this about Arnie. Every time I ask him to come on this program, he comes on this program on this and other subjects. He knows there's a lot of support. There's also a lot of skepticism, and he has been here for the hour. I hope you'll continue to join us throughout this process, because as you say, if nothing's going to derail this, if this is coming downtown, a lot of people hope it's going to going to be great for downtown, so let's keep talking.
And I appreciate the forum.
Well, thank you. And you know, Bob Morgan's another guy, especially when I remember with the passing of the Glazers, how much talk there was about not only their legacy, but, you know, people like Bob Morgan, development, how they care about this city. Bob is a little bit more of a private person, and I understand that, but maybe we'll talk to Bob as well in the future. But thank you, Arnie, and continued conversations on this.
Thank you, Evan.
Arnie Rothschild, Chairman and CEO of the Rochester Broadway Theater League. Short break, and Dr. Bill Valenti from Trillium, and his memoir on the battle against AIDS is next.